And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
And welcome to On The Ledge podcast. I'm your host, Jane Perrone. And no, that wasn't a script error. According to the Urban Dictionary, hoya is an alternative form of greeting to hi. So that's how I'm going to be starting out my conversations from now on, because this week's show is dedicated to the hoya plant family. And with the help of my guest, Doug Chamberlain of Vermont Hoyas, I'll be answering all your hoya queries, finding out how to grow these wonderful climbing and trailing plants, and immersing ourselves into the wonderful world of the wax plant. Just a teeny bit of housekeeping before we get started with the show proper. Have you checked out On The Ledge's merchandise shop yet? If you're getting quick, there's free delivery on all orders until February the 2nd, so bag yourself a mug, t-shirt or hoodie with the fantastic new On The Ledge logo on it. You can choose from black and white or shades of green, and I'm really pleased with the quality of this merch. It really does look fantastic, so do check it out. Just follow the shop link at the top of my homepage at janeperrone.com. And a gentle plea to all you listeners. If you're not signed up for my newsletter, please do go and get that sorted straight away, because there will be a newsletter winging its way to my subscribers in the next week or so. It's easy enough to subscribe. Just click on the newsletter link in the top right-hand corner of my website. Speaking of which, that's about to get a fancy new redesign, so please do take a look at that and let me know what you think of it once it's there. You'll know when it's done, because it's going to look fantastic. Well, maybe I should let you be the judge of that, actually. In this month's newsletter, you'll find my top tips for really nice plant-related Valentine's gifts. I found some fantastic companies selling some awesome stuff. So if you're looking for a gift for that special planty person in your life, do check that out. And I'm also gathering questions for upcoming interviews on African violets and epiphytic cacti, which includes Christmas cactus, Easter cactus, Hattiorus, Lepismium and Rispsalis. So if you've got any questions about any of those plants, then do let me know so I can quiz my experts. Right, now it's time to chat to Doug. If you've not come across Doug before, he runs a YouTube channel and a website called Vermont Hoyas, and he grows more than 100 hoyas in his home in Vermont. If you've never come across the wax plant before, hoyas are the most wonderful and easy to grow houseplant. Hoyas look exotic, but most of them are actually pretty easy to grow, so they're fantastic plants if you're just starting out with your houseplant collection. Even if you think you've never come across a hoya before, you probably have, because a hoya species called Hoya kerrii is responsible for those heart-shaped leaves in pots that you see around this time of year at Valentine's Day. I find out a little bit more about those a bit later with Doug, but first I want to find out a bit more about Doug's own collection. And I know I say this almost every week, but please do visit the show notes at janeperrone.com and read along while you're listening. That way you'll get to see some of the beautiful plants that we're talking about, because some of the Latin names are long in this one. Yes, Hoya McGillivray, I am looking at you. Doug, your Hoya collection is somewhat legendary. Whenever people talk about Hoyas, you inevitably come up online when I'm looking at various Facebook groups and things. This is obviously something you've got really deep into. How many Hoya species and cultivars do you think you've got? Are we talking about dozens?
Well, I try to keep my collection to around 100 plants. Any more than that, and it becomes quite difficult to take care of. So I'm moving them in and moving them out quite a bit.
And how did this obsession start? Was it like most of us, you start off with just being, you know, picking up a plant in the garden center or being given one, and then it spirals from there?
That's exactly what happened to me. I was always a foliage plant kind of guy, and I knew nothing about Hoyas. I picked up an extremely small plant it wasn't even a garden center. It was a building supply store, Home Depot. It was a tiny little plant in a 3-inch pot, and I just kind of liked the leaves, and it said Hoya rubra on it, which meant nothing to me. So I took it home and I put it on the windowsill, and it began to grow and grow, and it turned into quite a spectacular plant after a couple of years, and then it, lo and behold, it flowered, and that was it. I was in love with them from that point forward.
That's a wonderful thing when you find that plant that really makes you get very excited, and you just love that plant and you want to grow it. That's a wonderful feeling when you find that plant that really does it for you. I think that's fantastic. And you talk about on your website many different types of Hoyas, but is there any particular Hoya that is your absolute favorite?
Well, I've always said if I could only grow one Hoya, it would probably be Hoya cumangiana. And it's not that spectacular a looking Hoya, but it has a lovely scent of cinnamon and spices. It grows very rapidly, so that you could do any number of things with it. You could even wrap it around a topiary if you wanted to. I really like that plant. I've had some huge specimens over the years, some of them going like 2 meters tall, all wrapped around a trellis. So they finally get so big I have to get rid of them. But I always have one of those things going at any given time.
When we're talking about Hoyas, is there a general care guide that we can apply to most of the species that we're likely and hybrids that we're likely to find in our garden centres? Do they all need fairly similar growing conditions? And
they do. Unfortunately, it was my lot in life to fall in love with a plant that requires high humidity and likes it warm, because that isn't very good with the place that I live. But generally Hoyas like it. There's basically three types of Hoyas. There's Hoyas that do best in cool conditions, which anywhere from the lowest tolerated temperature would be like 10 C to the highest tolerated temperature would be like 25 C, and then the intermediate group of Hoyas, which is the largest number of Hoyas, they're happiest from the lowest sustained temperature of around 15-16 C to and it doesn't ever want to be higher than like 35 C. And then there's the really warm temperature Hoyas, of which there aren't that many, that like it extremely hot, and they'll be happy over 35 to 40 C even. They can survive quite nicely in those temperatures. So basically that the largest group of Hoyas are that intermediate group of Hoyas. And I've never found a Hoya that doesn't do best in humid conditions. So in the house, you want to have, at least on pebble trays, keep your humidity up as high as possible. Even if you have the temperature right, if that air is dry, you're not going to be that successful with Hoyas.
I recently got a humidity meter and mine's reading about 50% most of the time. Is that enough?
That is enough for the majority of the Hoyas. There are Hoyas, though, that really won't start putting on good growth until you get up into the 60-70% Hoyas. And my grow tents that I keep in the basement, the humidity in those things rarely fall below 70%, but you can't have that in a typical house, or you're going to run into mold and all kinds of other issues. But for your typical Hoya, 50% is going to be quite lovely for them. But if you get down into the low 40s, it's not so good.
Okay, well, that's giving me comfort. Is one of those really high humidity Hoyas Hoya linearis? Because I've read lots of things about caring for this plant, which I acquired in the form of some cuttings last year. And I've read lots of things about, oh, this is one of the most difficult Hoyas to grow. But so far, mine seems pretty happy. But I'm just wondering if that one is generally classed as needing that extra humidity boost.
It's not necessary for it to be that humid for that particular species. And by the way, if you're doing well with Hoya linearis, you have a green thumb, because that presents a lot of problems for many people. It's a tough Hoya to grow. I grew one years ago and I lost it. So I'm looking for a chance to pick up another one, give that one another go. But if you can grow Hoya linearis, you're doing pretty well for yourself.
Oh, well, I'm feeling rather pleased with myself now.
You should.
Well, you know, my rule with Hoyas is just to just not water them until I think they're absolutely desperate for water. That's kind of, especially in the wintertime, they tend to be up on a high shelf above two rooms. And so they don't get watered very often. And I think that's what probably saves them, because I just don't touch them too much in terms of, and never fall into that classic trap of overwatering them. So I guess that's my experience with them. But I did have one thing I wanted to ask you about was, I had a Hoya carnosa. Tell me if this is a normal experience or not, but it was a variegated one, and it started to throw out completely white stems with completely white leaves. And I thought, oh, this is exciting. How nice. That looks really kooky. And I was, you know, all excited about it.
Yes.
And then the plant just rapidly, rapidly, rapidly declined and just started to die, and to my horror. And I just managed to take some cuttings from the one healthy stem, which is, I hasten to say, not the totally white stem. And I've now got it going again. But does that sound like a familiar story with Hoyas, that they get, this one got to about 6 or 7 years old, and then it just seemed to start getting very unhappy. And I never quite worked out what I'd done wrong.
That is a very familiar story. I've seen it a lot online. It's never happened to me, because I don't grow that many variegated Hoyas. But those all white leaves, apparently they can rapidly deplete your plant of energy. And the first thing you should do when you see those, despite the fact that they're lovely and unusual, is to cut that vine off, because it will rob the energy from your plant. And eventually, it's hard for me to believe because I haven't experienced it myself, but supposedly it will rapidly kill your plant.
That's so interesting. I've learned my lesson now. I mean, I knew it for garden plants. You know, if a garden plant does that, you know, I'd immediately cut off that growth. But it just seemed so cool on an indoor plant that I couldn't bear to do it.
It is cool.
But I think in future I will definitely be removing any time that happens again, I'll be getting onto that, because it was so tragic, because it was such a big and lovely plant that had been flowering and, you know, was really happy. And then...
Yes, we hate to lose those kind of plants. Yes.
Tell me about potting mixes, seeing as we're kind of getting on to care. I always wonder, whenever I repot these things, I'm always kind of like slightly on a wing and a prayer in terms of what I have available and what to pot them into. And it usually ends up as some kind of random mix of John Innes number 2, and it's probably some perlite, and that's about it. And I never quite know if I'm hitting the mark. What potting mixes do you use for your Hoyas, Doug?
Well, I've made elaborate potting mixes in the past, and as a matter of fact, I made a YouTube video that's very popular on making a potting mix, but it goes too far. And now I'm much lazier with my potting mixes. Basically, I take a good peat-based potting soil, and I add about 25% extra perlite or sponge rock to it, just to make it a chunkier mix. If I have some small orchid bark around, I'll throw that in there too, but your basic peat-based potting mix, just amended with about a quarter of its weight with perlite or sponge rock, it gives it the roots enough aeration, yet keeps them able to retain enough water, keeps it moist enough that seems to work pretty well for me. I think it's best to not stray too far from what you know the best. I've tried all kinds of different potting mixes and experiments with Hoyas over the years, and sometimes you can really mess it up when you try something too different. Also, when I'm watering a Hoya, it's surprising how much I rely on the weight of the pot, and I can tell by lifting a pot whether a plant needs to be watered. Besides, also with a very chunky mix with Hoyas, it's hard to put your finger down into the mix because it's so thick with perlite and rocks. You can't push your finger down there. So a lot of times I rely on weight. So when I try something really strange and add other things that are heavy, it throws off my watering gauge. So I think it's best not to stray too far from what you know.
And there's a renaissance of the terracotta pot at the moment. Do these plants like a terracotta pot, or are they happier in plastic?
Generally, a terracotta pot is not a great idea with Hoyas. They dry out the mix from the edges too quickly. You're really better off with a plastic pot. If you're going to use terracotta, it should be glazed in some kind of way so that it doesn't do that. You would think that Hoyas liking it kind of dry in the winter and everything, that terracotta would work, but in my experience, it's not a good pot for Hoyas.
And when you come to you've repotted your plant, I guess, is that a springtime activity generally for Hoyas, or as and when? I also worry, sometimes I hear that these plants like to be root bound, and I wonder kind of, well, how root bound? How do I know on a scale of, this isn't even a phrase, a root boundedness when I need to act? Because there's root bound and there's root bound. How do you judge that?
That's definitely true. Pretty much the story that Hoyas really love to be highly root bound in order to flower. It's folklore, or it's an old wives' tale. I try not to go longer than 2 years on repotting any Hoya. I find that they really don't like to be pot bound, and my Hoyas they flower profusely most of the time, and that high, tight root ball where it can't move or breathe. It's not great for a Hoya. The growth on them will begin to decline and the flowering goes away. I've heard stories of people leaving Hoya carnosus in the same pot for 40 years. But in most cases, those people that tell me that, they wonder why their plant doesn't flower any longer. And it really doesn't like to be pot bound to that degree.
It's interesting because there's such a proliferation of information out there on the internet, and not all of it is reliable. So that's good to hear from you that the chapter and verse on that. What about pests and diseases? Touch wood, I don't think I've ever had any pests on my Hoyas. Is spider mite an issue for these guys?
There's three pests that will go after Hoyas: aphids, mealybugs, and spider mites. Mealybugs are the worst of the pests for the Hoyas, because if you get an infestation of those with all of the nooks and crannies and different leaves of Hoyas, you're in trouble. But I myself have not had any real problem with mealybugs, but spider mites, on the other hand, have been they periodically will flare up for me, and what I do to get rid of them, and strangely enough, I haven't had problems with spider mites in the regular house on the windowsills and stuff, but in my grow tents, they will periodically flare up, and I use a high concentration of neem oil. It's a product called Azomax, which is like really refined neem oil that's very concentrated. And I spray everything with that, and it takes care of them in very short order. They can't survive it. And when you can keep the humidity high enough too, it also discourages spider mites.
I think it's always a fingers crossed situation with these things, isn't it? You just hope that you never have a really bad outbreak, because you know it's
absolutely true.
It's going to be so much work.
It is. Many serious Hoya growers, they don't even fool around with taking a chance, and they use a systemic called imacloprid. and it takes the stuff up into its tissues, and when a mealybug or an aphid bites it, they're instantly dead. And a lot of growers have gone to using that product. But I don't recommend using that, especially if you ever put your hoys outside, because there's a fear that that chemical could be causing some of our bee collapse. So I discourage people from using it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things where the large scale growers, you know, it's one thing. But for us, I mean, even if you've got 100 plants, hopefully if you're keeping the conditions right. Also, I think, you know, spider mite strikes when that humidity is a bit low and the plant is a bit stressed, it's much more likely to take hold.
Absolutely.
It's time for a short break. I'll be back with Doug shortly. But let's hear about another British podcast that's definitely worth a listen.
Hello, I'm Sarah Wilson from the Roots and All podcast. On the podcast, I talk about gardening, indoors and out, with some of the most knowledgeable people around. Listen and find out the answers to things like why you should plant a tree in a square hole, not a round one, whether or not that fox that comes in your garden is going to try and eat your cat, why we've been growing alliums all wrong, why we keep killing our cacti and succulents, how we can deal with slugs if we don't want to kill them, why we as gardeners should be worshipping at the feet or bellies of earthworms, what you can expect if you hire a garden designer, whether or not you need a gardener and how much you should pay them, how to disbud dahlias, how to water your houseplants, what is biochar, what is the perfect tree for a small garden, what are the best plants for wildlife. Anyway, you get the picture. There's loads of great information for growers, so I'd love it if you'd join me for an episode. Find the Roots and All podcast on iTunes or your usual podcast provider, or you can listen direct from my website, www.rootsandall.co.uk.
Let's have a little chat about light.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Are there any hoyas that can survive in really shady spots or really sunny spots, or do they all like that kind of elusive, bright, indirect light spot?
It's surprising how adaptable hoyas are. I for the most part in my house, I don't have good window light. I have a lot of north windows, and it constantly surprises me what will end up flowering. I have Hoya curtisii flowering right now, and I originally made a video on that plant a number of years ago about how I moved it everywhere in the yard following the sun. I would move it three times a day to follow the sun so it would have full sun, and it flowered. So I thought, oh wow, the only way that thing can flower is in full sunshine, and that's what I reported. But in the past couple of years, the plant has flowered in a north window in the darkest, dreariest days of the year. Hoyas are constantly surprising. They're very adaptable. Indirect light is great. 2 to 3 hours of morning sun is probably the ideal. They'll also do well with a little bit of sun in the afternoon. So they are pretty adaptable for the most part. The only hoyas that require like full sun most of the time are these Eristemmas, which I don't even fool around with, like Lauterbachii. They get these huge like tennis ball sized flowers, and a lot of people want to grow them. But they don't make you'll never flower them in household conditions. I've never heard of anyone even flowering it in the United States, even in South Florida. So I stay away from those because it just takes up too much room for too little reward.
We're talking about flowers. One of the wonderful things about flowers is the huge variety and sheer interest in the different types of flowers. What are some of the more exotic and flashy of the Hoya flowers that you can easily grow in a home environment?
The easiest Hoya to get a large flower on, in my opinion, for your typical home grower is Hoya imperialis. I love this plant. It gets large flowers 3 inches across. I've measured many of them. They're absolutely spectacular, and people can't seem to get enough of them every time I post a picture. I have a couple of different ones flowering right now. And in a typical household conditions, I think that's the easiest large flowered Hoya to impress your friends with. Hoya McGillerii, which was the first large flowered Hoya that I bloomed, is totally spectacular. But what it requires to bloom is you've got to have a consistent number of 12 to 14 hour day length days in order to do that. And like where you would live, you would need to use a grow light to achieve that. But it's absolutely worth it. It's totally beautiful, beautiful flowers. And what I like about McGillerii over Imperialis is it doesn't drip nectar. We should also talk about, that's one annoying feature of many Hoya flowers, is they will drip copious amounts of nectar, which can make a tremendous mess in the house. And the Imperialis is really bad for that. As a matter of fact, I have to bag my flowers in plastic bags to catch all of the drips right now. Otherwise, you quickly cover your leaves, and then that attracts sooty mold, and then that's a mess. So my ideal Hoya is not a heavy nectar dripper.
Yeah, I've occasionally thought, what is that on the floor? And then suddenly you realize it's your Hoya that's just dripping all over the place.
Yes, Multiflora and Lockyer are the same thing. And I've cut off massive amounts of flowers and just thrown them out because I couldn't deal with the mess.
Well, we've been talking about cutting things off. So one of the questions from my listeners was, how do you prune Hoyas? Any tips on that, Doug?
Well, I seldom prune my Hoyas, but I do take off any yellow or dying leaves or vines that might be shriveling. I cut that off to make the plant look better. If you're going to prune your Hoyas, I would cut them just above the leaf node. It makes it look a little better. Another thing, pruning Hoyas is an incredibly messy business for the most part. That milky sap that drips out of them will just get on everything. So it's best a job to do when you can take it outside in the summertime and you have a hose and you can keep spraying it off to keep the latex from drying on your plant leaves.
Ah, okay, that's a good tip. Another question that came from a listener was about propagation, which I guess is worth talking about in conjunction with pruning, because
yes,
of course, some of those pruning bits can then be turned into what I just learned from my, I'm studying for an RHS level 2 qualification, and I just learned the term propagules.
Wow, that's a new one for me too.
I know, a propagule is like a unit of propagation, whether it be a seed or a cutting or anything else. It's a propagule. So,
yeah, word for the day.
Yeah, exactly. Propagules. When it comes to propagating Hoyas, I mean, my approach with my dying, Carnosa was literally just to do the normal thing with a stem cutting and cut it so that it was just above a leaf node and then trimmed to the bottom of the next leaf node and then stuck in some gritty potting mix, which seemed to work quite well. Is that the rule for all Hoyas, or are there any special tips and tricks you've got?
For 10 to 12 years, that was pretty much the way that I propagated most of my Hoyas. All stem cuttings inserted into the potting mix, and then I would put it in a homemade propagator with a heat mat underneath and extra humidity. And I was usually, 90% successful using that method, and it's still my go-to method. And years ago, people would talk about taking stem cuttings and using water to root the Hoyas, and all the experts at the time, they just poo-pooed it. So I never went in that direction until one of my YouTube viewers, I was having trouble with trying to root the all-white flowered Hoya Bella, and it was nearly impossible. I would end up with 90-95% unsuccessful time after time. And then the woman told me, she said, why don't you try water? She said, I'm always 100% successful with water whenever I try. So as much as I didn't want to do it and as much as I didn't believe in it, I said, I got to try an experiment. So I took all of these different cuttings, difficult to root cuttings, and I put them all in their own individual little jar of water. And lo and behold, what did I get? 100% success the first time. So I was blown. I was blown away by that. So I will never poo-poo water rooting ever again for Hoya. So that seems to work very well. To root stem cuttings.
Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it? I was always of the same view of being a bit snobby yes. about water cultivation. And then I suddenly thought, why am I not trying this? And then realized that it worked for all kinds of things. So, it's interesting. Sometimes the experts aren't necessarily on top of all the different things that are possible.
That is true.
I guess the nice thing about cuttings is that most of the time you can, you know, it's no, if it doesn't work, it's hopefully no great loss. And you can kind of try again and try different techniques and see what works. Have you ever tried growing Hoyas from seed?
I've grown a number of Hoyas from seed. And I think it's something that everybody ought to try at least once. The Hoya that I recommend as the best candidate for that, especially for newbies, is Hoya Papachonii. It's this tiny, tiny little flowered Hoya that it almost seems like it's the blooms are self-fertilizing, because there is no possible way that these plants are being pollinated in my house. There's not a fungus gnat. There's no, absolutely no insects. And this plant flowers and produces seed pods all year round. And I grow this Hoya in nothing but sphagnum moss. And it's so easy to propagate from seed. Another thing about Hoya seed, it has a very short lifespan. So you want to make sure that if you get seed that you plant it right off, because most of the times in a couple of months, that seed won't be viable anymore.
Well, that's good to know. I don't know if you're aware, but we have a sew-along coming up where we try sowing lots of houseplant seeds. So it's useful to know that for Hoyas, because I'm always amazed by the range of different things that listeners decide to grow. So knowing that lots of them love Hoyas, that's a great tip. Going back to the flowers, another question I had was, when is a plant mature enough to flower? Is it to do with maturity, or is it just getting those right amount of day length?
If I knew the answer to that, I could get every Hoya to flower for me. It varies so much. I just had a Hoya flower in 2 months in a jar of water. So that would be on the one extreme. And then I've had Hoyas for 5 or 6 years that have yet to produce a flower for me. So getting those, figuring that out is nearly impossible. Your typical Hoya is going to flower anywhere from 6 months of age to 2 years of age. That is the vast majority. And then there are the other ones that fall outside of those boundaries.
That gives us a guideline at least. One question that comes up a lot is people who end up buying, particularly at this time of year around Valentine's Day, those individual Hoya Kerrii leaves as kind of a heart in a pot.
Yes.
And they're wondering why it hasn't done anything a year later. It's just sitting there.
Yes.
Does that make you a bit sad, or do you kind of look at it philosophically and say, well, okay, 1 in 100 people might be converted to Hoyas this way?
I think I take the latter statement that you made. I look at it kind of philosophically. I get this question a lot. I think you have to enjoy that that leaf for what it is. I've also seen they paint all kinds of different scenes on these things. I've seen them in Thailand, these single Hoya Kerrii leaves that they will paint scenes on, and obviously you can even get your name put onto them and all kinds of different things. But the reason they don't turn into plants is they lack those meristematic cells, the tissue that would allow them to form a plant. It just isn't there in the leaf. If you're lucky enough and they got a little sliver of the vine on that leaf when they took the cutting, then you actually might get a plant. But that's why, you know, 98 out of 100 will only remain leaves for the rest of their life.
Yes, I did see somebody on Instagram who had this lovely specimen which did grow from one leaf. But I think, unfortunately, that gives everyone else false hope that
yes,
their plant's going to do the same. And the likelihood is it won't. And I can see it's clever marketing on the part of plant sellers.
It definitely is.
Doug, tell us about your YouTube channel, because this is something that I'm sure listeners will want to go and check out.
Well, it all started innocently enough, probably like 7 or 8 years ago. I was making time lapse videos of some of my Hoya flowers opening, and I wanted to have some way of sharing this. So I knew nothing about YouTube, so I decided to make an account and post the Hoya McGillerii, the blooms opening on it. And I got a lot of favorable feedback, and then one thing led to another, and I put up one video and then another video. And then I sort of moved away from the time-lapse photography, because I guess once you've seen a few sets of blooms open that way, the appeal is gone. So I started not getting that many views on that. Then I started making how to do different things with Hoyas, how to repot a Hoya, root-bound Hoya, growing Hoya semi-hydroponically. And then one video after another, now I have like 350 of them up. So it's kind of crazy. And it also is surprising to me about how many people really love Hoyas in the world, because I thought there were just a few nuts like me, but apparently there are a lot of people, because I have over 3,000 subscribers now to that little Hoya channel.
Yeah, so, that's fantastic.
I've had fun with it.
Do you think, like other types of houseplants, Hoyas are kind of coming back then? I always think of them historically as being kind of those plants that your nana had, and that you might, you know, as a child, maybe you kind of, they were just there and you didn't really pay much attention to them and they just sat there growing. But they've kind of, I think in the last few years, they definitely have had this real uplift of interest along with other houseplants, which is really exciting to see. And they seem to be more widely available to buy, which is fantastic. I mean, interestingly, episodes and episodes ago, when I last spoke to my friend and fellow podcaster Alice Fowler, I remember her saying the reason why Hoyas are not more popular in terms of being able to buy them from nurseries is that generally once you've got a Hoya, they're around for the next 20 years. So from the nursery's point of view, they're not going to get any repeat sales. Whereas if they sell you a maidenhair fern, you know, you're going to be back next month buying another one. So
That could very well be true. I think the reason that there aren't more Hoyas in the nursery, I've asked myself this question a lot, and I believe it's because they are too slow growing for the most part for most nurseries to want to propagate them. They want something that will grow very quickly. They can get it in the stores in a hurry, and generally Hoyas don't fit that. What they're looking for. That's the biggest reason I can come up with why they're not more available. Around here, it's almost impossible. There's like three Hoyas that are available during the summer in the nurseries. It's your basic Carnosas and Compactas, and occasionally you'll get a DS70, and if you're really lucky, you'll get a Lacanosa that. But other than that, you never see anything. If you want to get into the wide variety of Hoyas, you pretty much have got to go to collectors on eBay. And myself, I've had to resort now to placing an order or two from Thailand every year. That Thailand is the mecca center for all new Hoyas that are coming into the trade.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't ask earlier, which I should have done when we were talking about various varieties, is obviously these can be grown as trailing plants or as climbing plants to some degree. Does it matter? Are there certain species that prefer to trail down and certain ones that like to cling to things, or does it really not matter, just according to what space you've got?
It's mostly according to what space you have, and as a general rule of thumb, the small leaf Hoyas, they would in all likelihood prefer to grow hanging, and your larger leaf Hoyas would it's much easier to grow them up a trellis standing up, especially the stiff vine Hoyas. I can't imagine trying to grow a Hoya carrii in a hanging basket. That would be quite an undertaking. So yeah, as a general rule, small leaf Hoyas hanging baskets and the larger ones in trellised.
Perfect. Well, it's been wonderful to talk to you about Hoyas. I'm now going to go inside and look at all my Hoyas and check they're okay, because I'm feeling guilty that I haven't got them down from the shelf in a few weeks. But the great thing about them is that I know they'll be fine, because they're just kind of sitting there resting through the winter, and hopefully they're going to burst into life a bit more in the springtime. But let me tell you what Hoyas I've got so far, and you can tell me what else I should get.
Okay.
So I've got my Linearis, and I've got my variegated Carnosa, and I think the only other Hoya I've got is a cutting of Matilde. So what should be my next purchase, Doug?
Well, you really should get one of the really fragrant type Hoyas so that you can experience the perfume. That it's absolutely amazing. You can perfume an entire house with a single bloom on some of these Hoyas. So you've got to get something in your collection that would be fragrant. For a recommendation, there's several. If you want a small leaf variety, Lacanosa, which is readily available, that would fill the bill. Hoya Calycina. It's just a mind-bogglingly beautiful fragrance coming out of there. Hoya Griffithii, it's the same thing. So one of those, or you should at least have an Australis in your collection, which has beautiful smelling flowers.
Okay, well, that's the shopping list set up, Doug.
Okay.
I'll send complaints from my husband direct to you, okay?
Fortunately, I have a very tolerant wife too to put up with.
Yeah, I find if I sort of slip them in without saying anything, usually he doesn't notice. So it's and then suddenly he goes, "Where have all these plants come from?" But he's very tolerant. Well, it's lovely to talk to you, Doug. Is there anything else that you wanted to raise before I let you go?
Just one other thing I want to touch on. The first year of a Hoya's life is its most vulnerable. Once you get it past that first year, they're a lot harder to kill. And the biggest thing that I've learned in the past couple of years as far as growing Hoyas is to grow them in a series of net pots. Because with a net pot, you can actually really tell when it needs to be watered, not just when the surface is dry, but sometimes when the surface is dry, I can pull up the net pot and then I can see from the edges. I keep a net pot within a cash pot, so that you don't want to grow it just in a net pot with no cash pot, because the it would dry out too quickly. But you can pull the net pot out of the cash pot, and then you can see whether it needs to be watered or not by observing the sides.
That's a really good tip.
That was a huge, the best thing I've learned in the past couple of years.
Well, that's a really excellent tip to end on. Thanks so much, Doug.
You're very welcome, Jane. It was fantastic talking to you.
Patreon subscribers of $5 a month or more will be able to hear more from Doug from Vermont Hoyas in the coming week, when I'll be putting up an extra leaf number 22, which contains more of Doug's interview, including his chat about Dischidias, or is it Dischidias, how to grow Hoyas in semi-hydroculture, and Hoyas for extra small spaces. If you're not a Patreon subscriber and would like to be one, do visit the show notes at janeperrone.com to find out how. That's all for this week's show. I do hope you've enjoyed it, but do let me know what you think. As always, the comments are open on the website. Take care. Bye. Music you heard in this week's show was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops. An Instrument the Boy Called Happy Day Gakana by Samuel Corwin, and Plantation by Jason Shaw, all licensed under Creative Commons. See janeperone.com for details.